This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Recording after the close today, January 13th, a long weekend coming up for Martin Luther King Jr. I guess his birthday celebration on Monday. But it seems like it's been a pretty rough week or felt pretty long. So I'm happy to have the holiday break.
Yeah, same here. Although we do, for those listeners that are at least in Southern California, if not in the state of California, we are in for another bout of torrential rainfall. So let's strap in for that. And with that, I'll take us into the markets. Looks like on this week, we have a lot of positive numbers here. S&P 500 up 2.7% on the week, led by consumer discretionary, which is up 5.75%. Only two sectors here that ended the week negative. We've got consumer staples down 1.4% and healthcare down 12 basis points. Moving over to fixed income, I see the two-year treasury note at 4.22%. It looks like, the two-year end in, those are the last vestiges of a 4% handle type of yield across the treasury curve. So everything after the two looks to be with three handles. So let's start out with the 10-year treasury. That's at close the week at 3.5%, and the long bond at 3.6. So it looks like even I'm looking at the two-year note right now. It's come in yield. It's in about it's like 20 basis points since the end of last year. So really, with some of this data that's been coming, economic data that's been coming in, it seems like the 2 years is kind of fading. Or at least it's pointing towards the end of the Fed rate hiking cycle coming up fairly shortly. It might even be fading some of this 5%, 5.25% type Fed funds target rate that the market seems to be anticipating in terms of the Fed funds futures. So we'll see. We'll see which one holds and which one is right. But it's an interesting thing to note here. Looking at the yield spreads here, 3 month versus the 10-year treasury yield is still inverted at -1.1%. And the 2 year relative to the 10-year yield is -70 basis points there. So very well inverted still. And what that means for the Bloomberg US bond aggregate, that's up 84 basis points as of the for the week to date. Pretty much all the sectors that we cover here within fixed income in the green as well, led by the IG corporate credit space, up 1.7% on the week. High yield a close second there at +1.5%, and then EM up 1.25%. Those three all above the 1% mark for the weekly performance. The laggard here would be, looks like agency MBS up 80 basis points and U.S. Treasuries up 60 basis points there.
Yeah, last year, remember, we were joking about how the investment grade corporate bond index and the S&P were battling it out to see who could be the worst performer. So far, month to date, you're looking at IG corporate credit up 4.8% and S&P up 4.2. So you got investment grade corporates making their comeback here, and they're leading the S&P. Over the first 13 days of the year.
Yeah, let's see what happens for the rest. I got, I don't know, it's a little bit early to say, but I guess we'll see on that. I'm not going to call it out yet, but
you can take 480 in 2 weeks of the year, annualize that.
But yeah, I do like some of the tailwinds that we've been seeing. And in terms of a lot of the fixed income space based on the kind of the beginning yields that we're seeing that give you a little bit more, much more buffer than we had in terms of the first 2 weeks of 2022. So I definitely like the starting point here for fixed income relative to where we were last year, and especially on the backdrop of this, that horrific year. It's, I mean, it'd be hard pressed to put up another repeat of what we had last year in terms of that strong negative performance in many of the fixed income markets here. Moving over to the commodity side of things, the Bloomberg Commodity Index is up 3.3% on the week-to-date basis. Looking at gold managed to make its way above the 1900 a troy ounce. It's looking like it closed this Friday at $1,923 a troy ounce. And when we move over to WTI crude oil, the front month future there is just 8 cents shy of an $80 per WTI barrel of WTI crude oil there, but still it's up 8.3% on the week-to-date basis. So strong moves there in terms of the crude oil space. And then looking at Bitcoin had a strong week, up 15%, and it's off to a strong start for the year. The year is up 17% on Bitcoin. So that pretty much rounds
it's up over 19,000 a coin now. So
that's right.
It broke out of that range that it was in. It kind of seemed like it was stuck in that range for such a long time last year. It broken out of that range.
Yeah, they had a tough time getting out of that 16,000, 16 handle there. So it's, maybe a little bit of applause for Bitcoin here. We'll see what happens with that. It's still a long way from the high watermark there, which was north of 60,000 last year. So we'll see. That type of move in terms of Bitcoin. I mean, we've seen the volatility and just the sheer magnitude of some of those price rises and falls in this digital asset. So wouldn't be surprised if we would be able to get up there again. I'm not saying we will, but it's definitely within the realm of possibility there.
Yep.
So that runs up the market. Let's see what happened in terms of the macro front last week.
It was a pretty quiet week. We did note that on Tuesday, Jerome Powell was talking, and we were on the lookout to see if he made any mention of anything that might signal what the Fed policy was going forward. But I think it was in Sweden, and it was the focus of the talk was on the central bank independence. And by all accounts, Jay Powell stuck to the script there in terms of talking about central bank independence and didn't really give any hints about the Fed, which way the Fed was leaning. We did though on Thursday get the big data point of the week. That was the CPI. The month over month CPI came in at a negative 0.1%. That was as expected. That brought the also core CPI, so ex food and energy, that came in at 0.3%, exactly spot on as expected also. And then that brought the year-over-year headline CPI number to 6.5 and the core CPI to 5.7. So all in all, kind of an as expected number from the CPI. You know, we have in the past talked about the different ways that some of the central banks or the regional banks go through and slice and dice the CPI numbers to kind of give you maybe a better feel for the direction of inflation. The Cleveland Fed, they run a median CPI. That number was a 0.4 month over month and a 6.9% year over year. The 6.9 was a slight downtick from 7.0. Then they also run a 16% trimmed mean CPI. So they take off the top and bottom 8% outliers of the CPI components. That number came in at 0.4% and 6.5%, respective month over month and year over year, respectively. That's actually the year over year number is actually down from 6.7. So that's showing a good trend, at least from the trimmed mean CPI number. And then the Atlanta Fed, they run their, they run their sticky CPI and their flexible CPI. We always want to look at the sticky one to see kind of what the general trend of inflation is. And that number came in at 6.7. That's actually up from the 6.6 number in November. So all wasn't great in the CPI report. But generally came in as expected. And another thing that people were looking at, because Jay Powell has been talking about it, is core services inflation ex housing. So That number is actually, you know, Bloomberg does a calculation on that because it's not actually released. But they do a calculation and they say that number came in at 6.19%, down from 6.23% last month. So just a slight downtick there, but it's significantly down from the 6.4 and 6.5 we saw in October and September. So that number is trending down. So because of that, it feels like the market has started to price in the probability of a, or they've started to decrease the probability of a 50 basis point increase in the Fed funds meeting that happens on February 1st. It was about 25% chance of a 50 basis point increase on Monday, and we're currently sitting at about a 9% chance. So it seems like the market is pretty much pricing in a 25 basis point increase. And then also Nick Timiraos came out and he basically said that after the CPI report that the inflation eased in December and is likely to keep the Fed on track to reduce the size of their interest rate increases to a quarter percentage point at this meeting that concludes on February 1st. So he also talked that number, that probability down. So seems like barring any sort of surprises there, we're gonna see a 25 basis point increase on February 1st. Also on Thursday, we did get the jobless claims numbers. Those actually came in better than expected. So initial jobless claims came in at 205,000 versus a 215,000 estimate. And continuing claims came in at 1.634 million, down 76,000 below expectations of 1.71. So all in all, labor market continues to be strong. Inflation is continuing to slow. And then this morning we did get, you know, the University of Michigan surveys out there. Let's just focus on the 5 to 10 year inflation expectations, since that's what Jay Powell has talked about in the past. That number came in at 3.0. It was expected to be 2.9, but it came in a little bit higher than that at 3.0. It's still in that kind of range that people have been seeing, and the 1 year inflation, as is typical, because gasoline prices have been falling, the 1 year inflation expectations have also been falling. So all in all, pretty quiet week. We did have CPI, but given CPI was kind of as expected, didn't really move markets too much. Really more of a just kind of wait and see approach to see what the Fed talks about on February 1st.
Yeah, and you know, just when I heard you mention the core services ex housing, that new creation, the newest creation, or the way that they like to cut the data to kind of find data points to support their position, it's just really starting to slice the bologna a bit thin. And you know, as you recall, Jeff, you and I, we talk about it a lot, how with you know, the Fed, in terms of what they do to take a look at data, the last time they changed CPI and really created this idea of core CPI versus headline CPI was because it was on the back of the oil crisis back in 1970, actually back to that crisis back in the 70s, when, you know, they said that the Fed came out and said that there's so much impact on the consumer price indices index baskets by WTI crude oil at the time. And the Fed didn't really have a handle in terms of being able to control the price of that. So they stripped it out and created the core CPI basket around that time. So now, you know, they're stripping out housing, but you really don't have that same argument here, because the Fed certainly has a handle in terms of you know, the cost of housing and shelter there, just given their fingers on the rate market there and how that translates to the mortgage market. So it's interesting to see how, you know, the Fed continues to move the goalposts, let's say, you know, just to find data that they want.
That's right. And, you know, you see in the Fed raises rates and you see mortgage rates rise and housing falls, you know, a few months later. It's not a long and variable lag that usually you see from Fed rate increases. It's not instantaneous, but it's a very quick movement there. So certainly that's something that they can't really talk about. That you're right, Sam, how they don't have control over that. At some point it becomes, you know, X food, X energy, X shelter. I mean, those are lifebloods. You kind of need all those to live. So, you know, maybe the Fed should focus on those as opposed to, you know, focus on the things that people need as opposed to the extraneous factors out there.
Yeah, definitely is a core piece of my spending that on a monthly basis there, if not a daily basis. So I agree with you there.
Well, let's, I think we're in an interesting point here in the market, as we've been talking about over the past few months, we don't, you know, there's a lot of recession indicators out there that are talking about we're in a recession now, or that a recession is forthcoming. The labor market is still saying, the labor market is still looking very strong. We did talk about this and we kind of went through our list of recession indicators and where they stood back on episode 82 on September 7th of last year. Sam, you and I were both talking about how it felt like it was about a year ago, but alas, it was only 4 months ago. Why don't we give a quick update to people on where they stand, where these recession indicators stand? We'll just focus on the ones that we felt that we talked about back in episode 82 that were, I would say important, and were much more. You didn't have too many outliers, or they weren't as noisy. Why don't we give people an update on where some of these recession indicators stand right now and our feeling on them?
Yeah, and so one thing that I noticed too is that we do have a lot more signals that are now signaling recession. So, you know, that's another reason why we thought that we could kind of update people. But let's just start out with what the Atlanta Fed GDP now is showing. That's currently signaling 4.1% in terms of growth. So that is expansionary. And, you know, long-time listeners know that's a little bit, that takes the more recent data and the economic data points that come out in the Atlanta Fed compiles it and calculates it to give a more real-time indicator of where the economy is going versus these quarterly lag GDP numbers that get put out by the BLS? Or I can't remember which agency actually did the B. I can't remember which agency puts out the GDP numbers, but the quarterly numbers are there now off the top of my head. But one indicator that we do like to look at in terms of having a recessionary signal is the leading economic index, the LEI, on a year-over-year basis. It's currently at negative 4.5%. And that implies that we currently are in a recession, given that negative number there. And one thing that I would note is that since this data has been available since January of 1960, we've had 9 recessions since then, with only one false positive there. And the way that we kind of look back at this to determine if the signal is false or legitimate is that we want the LDI year over year to be negative at least 2 consecutive months. And with that kind of framework, we've seen it only have one false positive. And it typically is pretty close in terms of the way that we think of the lead and the lag. Generally speaking, it's usually anywhere from less than 6 months to being a coincident indicator of whether or not the U.S. economy is in a state of recession, as subsequently determined by the National Bureau of Economic Research. Let's see here. Moving on to kind of a trio of signals here that we have the ISM data, the ISM manufacturing PMI, the manufacturing new orders PMI, and then the services PMI. Each one of these are in contractionary territory right now. The manufacturing PMI is at 48.4, the services PMI is at 49.6, and then the new orders for manufacturing is at 45.2. And if listeners recall, anything less than 50 suggests or indicates a contraction there. So, well, when we take a look at this, especially since, especially the manufacturing side, that tends to lead a little bit more in terms of being a noisy signal. There's been 8 false positives since its start date, going through the last 12 recessions there. When you look at it, and all 3 of these signals corroborate one another with these negative contractionary signals, that in itself is a bit of a signal. So the fact that services ticked down into below 50 last month in the last period, that is pretty significant. And then also, you know, we have talked quite a bit about the spread between different points along the treasury curve, the 2-year and the 10-year. As we indicated earlier, the 2-year versus the 10-year is currently inverted by 73 basis points. And then when we look at 3-month relative to the 10-year yield, that's inverted by 1.1%. So both of those are inverted. Right now the 2-year, 10-year spread, that first inverted back in July. And when I say inverted, the way we look at it is if you have at least an inversion by a basis point, and it holds for five consecutive trading days, we determined that the signal has been struck. So that first met that criteria back in July. So based on that, it looks like that signal is saying that we could have a recession somewhere within the next 6 months. When we look at the 3 month 10-year spread, that signal was achieved at late October. And that's currently implying that the recession is in the picture somewhere in the next 6 months.
Yeah, and remember, remember, Sam, we talked about that last week, the 3 month 10-year, and how based on the academic research that was done, it was a quarterly signal that they were using. So, you know, you could say, is it 3 months of staying negative, or does it just have to be negative on quarter ends? And so that'll be interesting to see whether, and it certainly seems like the 3 month 10-year spread is going to remain negative, certainly until or unless the Fed starts cutting rates. So that seems like it's going to be certainly more than 3 months there, a negative from that spread.
Yeah, and no doubt. I mean, I know with what we mentioned last time, we were trying to determine if it's just the quarter end, but based on our analysis, again, using that only inverted by a basis point for at least five trading days, using that as a signal, we've also seen no false positives there as well. So that being an inverted, as long as it has, based on the way that we've analyzed it, does at least suggest that we are going to see some significant slowing in economic activity, and it does suggest that perhaps a recession could be in the works in the next 6 to 12 months. Yep. And then when we look at some more other types of indicators, namely around the labor data, around Pizza Friday, as we like to call it, there's the unemployment rate. And when we look at the unemployment rate, and I'm talking about the headline U3 unemployment here, that is the one that's more widely reported in the media, we can look at it relative to various moving averages. The first one, the leading indicator, would be relative to its 12-month moving average. And right now, the U3 headline unemployment rate is 3.5. The 12-month moving average for that data point is 3.6. So right now, and the signal is the current unemployment rate crosses the 3 month average on the way up, that tends to be the signal for the impending recession. So right now it's still under, it's a spitting distance of making its way and crossing over that 3.6. We had a little bit of other way around roll last month where we actually saw the unemployment rate tick down. But as of right now, it's still signaling an expansion right now. So when we take a look at it at relative to its 3 month moving average, however, we actually have quite a bit of distance. So again, 3.5 is the current reading on the U3 headline unemployment rate. The 3 month moving average is at 5.7. This one here.
You mean 36 month moving average? So 3 year.
Yeah, 36 month moving average there. So when we take a look at this one, this is actually the one I'm waiting for to cross. It's much more coincident versus the 12 month. That gives you kind of the early signal. Haven't triggered that yet, but versus the 36 month here, that one has only had one false positive, and that was very on in the series, going back to 1948 or so. So that one seems to be the granddaddy of all recession signals. So we'll watch for that. And when it does start to move up, it can move up. It does historically move up rather quickly there. So keep an eye on for that 12-month cross, and then look at it for the 36-month afterwards to kind of corroborate that data. Yep. But those are some of the more primary ones that are easily accessible for our listeners to take a look at and kind of keep track of themselves. So those are the ones that we chose to bring up in terms of having some decent signaling ability as well, based on some of the historical data.
And so it seems like all the ones that are market based or you know, manufacturers, the PMIs and you know, the LEI, which is a mix of 10 different signals, those are all negative. But I guess I would look at it as the big ones, the GDP being, you know, if the GDP number comes in and it does come from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. If the GDP number does come in close to the Atlanta Fed GDP number 4.1, then it seems hard to say that that kind of growth, we're in a recession, or you know, unemployment stays low. it's kind of hard to say we're in a recession from there too, but all the other, you know, all the other indicators are all pointing recession or recession, you know, sometime soon.
Yep. And as always, we just wait to hear back from the Book of Record, the National Bureau of Economic Research, to make the determination. Oftentimes, several months or several, in some cases, years, the recession has already occurred.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, if you remember back in the April, the shortest recession ever that we had in 2020, took them, you know, was it to 14 months to say, oh yeah, we were in a recession for 2 months back in a year earlier. So, you know, I wouldn't rely on them to give you any signals, because by the time they tell you you were in a recession, you're probably, you know, most of the way out of the recession, if not all the way out of the recession.
Yeah, that's right. And we did put an episode on that, what the MBR looks at in terms of making a determination of recessions. And as pulling it up while you're talking, it looks like it was episode 88 that we recorded on October 21st of last year. So if you're interested in hearing what the Book of Record indicates that they look at and how they think about determining recessions or not, check out that episode.
Yep. So that, I thought that was a good synopsis, Sam. Let's move into kind of some things to keep an eye on for this next week, just kind of see if we're going to get any other any other indicators that might give us a hint on the way things are moving here. But we do get retail sales on Wednesday. Those numbers are expected to come in much worse than last month. So like the month over month numbers for December are expected to be a negative 0.8. And last month was a negative 0.6. So worse on that side. If you kind of take out, similar to what the Fed likes to look at, take out autos and gasoline, the number is expected to go to negative 0.1 from a negative 0.2. And the so-called control group is actually supposed to be a negative 0.3 versus a negative 0.2 the prior month. We also get PPI on Wednesday. So that number is actually expected, the headline number is expected to decrease by 0.1%. It was a positive 0.3 last month. So that's a good sign that the producer prices should be slowing down. If we take out the food and energy, that number is expected to be a positive 0.1, down from a positive 0.4% last month. So similarly, on the similar trend there, those numbers, if those come to fruition, the headline PPI will be 6.8, down from 7.4 last month. And then kind of your ex food and energy PPI will be 5.5, down from 6.2. So that's more deceleration of the PPI is the expectation there. We also get the Beige Book numbers on Wednesday, or the Beige Book, it's not numbers, but it's some description, some color on the Federal Reserve. We get that on Wednesday. And then Thursday, we get the jobless claims numbers again, as usual. So it's a short week, and it should be a pretty quiet week unless the PPI number comes out and surprises. I guess the surprises to the upside would be much more of a volatility making event. Unless it surprises significantly to the downside. But all in all, it should be a pretty quiet week.
Yeah, that's all we can hope for nowadays, right? But let's wait and see and tune in.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times these quiet weeks are upended by some Fed speak. So we'll keep an eye on out for that also.
Yeah, we do have a whole host of speakers coming out next week, including Williams and Brainard making the rounds there. So that could be something to worth keeping an eye out for too, as well, in terms of the headlines and see.
Well, they got it. You know, it's the blackout period starts next Saturday, so they got to get their speeches in while they can.
That's right.
Well, I think that wraps it up for this week, Sam. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening to us out there today, Monday Morning Minutes. You can find us on your favorite podcast platforms. If you're having any trouble finding us on your favorite one, feel free to shoot us an email at minutes@doubleline.com if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also hit us up on the Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
And don't forget to check out our website, doubleline.com, YouTube channel, youtube.com/doubleline capital. You can see all three portions now of the Double Line Roundtable Prime that was recorded last week. Make sure to get the answer to Sam, you tease something that Jim Bianco said on the Roundtable Prime. And as he was starting to say it, I started laughing because in my mind, I knew that I was listening intently to see what his breakdown was of the importance of Fed speak and who's important to listen to. So I thought that was a very amusing answer, and I listened to that. Don't forget that also, Sam, you're and Jeff Sherman's other podcast, The Sherman Show. You can follow you guys on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Sam, have a great birthday, and hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
Represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.
Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.